it's in any way a sham or anything else, or that there is not a process, is simply inaccurate and serves no good purpose.
It is true the City Council has been seeking alternate sites for the open-air shelter to move next spring. That's what Daryl Darling is talking about. Yes, no question about it. But it's also true that the majority of the group, the subcommittee doing that, have pretty much come to the conclusion that they don't look like there are any alternate sites at the moment, although there's sites still being investigated. But it doesn't look good. And more important, Celia Scott, council member who's also a member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, as well as a council member. She's a member of the private group, Citizens Committee for the Homeless, as well as the public city council. And other council members have been reluctant to explore the obvious question of an alternate site for Citizens Committee's community house or trailers. Since the open-air shelter is located right next to homeless services, it's located on a piece of property that is relatively isolated. It's in an area that's not doesn't disturb residents. It seems more likely that there'll be a site found for 10 trailers for 48 people than there will for a campground for 200. I mean, and that's the point that the Citizens Committee never deals with directly. Instead, it skirts around, and Daryl makes the statement that they're still investigating, and that's a serious thing. Yeah, they're investigating, yeah. But they aren't really investigating the big question of where to find alternate sites for the trailers. Though I think that, again, at this meeting, it became clear that they might indeed be considering that as well. So there was a positive prospect opened up here. No commitments, really, but a positive prospect. Actually, there was one commitment that I mentioned earlier in the program. Daryl Darling of Community House declared that the campground would remain open until December 3rd, period, whether there was bad weather or not, which is something that it had a lot of people anxious, and so that's good news for all you campers out there, good news for all you open-air shelter residents. You got till December 3rd at least. That's the commitment of Community House Director Daryl Darling, as well as the commitment of Rough Weather Ron Howard, who's the operations manager of the open-air shelter. Again, some more from the Duck Pond meeting, and also at the meeting you'll hear the voice of Scott Kennedy, you'll hear the voice of other people. It was a very interesting discussion.
I've attended a number of meetings in that regard. The mayor has had response immediately from the planning department to locate a variety of alternate locations. I've personally gone to the owners of several of those locations, and it's simply not possible for any individual to either make a realistic suggestion about what might be done with someone else's land, whether it's the churches or whether it's the cities or whether it belongs to a private party or a nonprofit organization or is leased by goodwill or anything else. Those conversations have to be taken seriously, have to be processed through their boards, and the goodwill of all involved has to be assumed.
Certainly it's true what Daryl is saying, and I beg the indulgence of my listeners for interrupting his statement with my commentary. It's also true that people who are going to inform the community and put some pressure on the city and the Citizens Committee needed to act actually even before they were acting in order to get significant public support. And we actually are getting public support. SOS got a very favorable story in the Metro Santa Cruz this week, the weekly, free weekly you find around town. There's extensive quoting from Ankle Deep Ann Curry on the issue. It's the first positive story and airing of the issues I've seen in the press, and hopefully it'll be followed by stories in other publications. I wrote a letter to the City on a Hill Press, which I hope will be printed. There's no City on a Hill this week because it's a holiday weekend, but next week there will be a City on a Hill. So the thing you're not hearing from Daryl Darling is the realistic assessment of most members of the subcommittee. There ain't no place to move the open-air shelter, Daryl. That's the bottom line. And I kind of resent his dodging the issue and suggesting that, oh, we're still looking and we're all in good faith here. And nobody doubts that he's looking in good faith. The question is he, if he were out there instead of living in a relatively comfortable bed and board establishment called the Darling House on the west side, would he be viewing the situation differently? And I think the answer would be definitely. So continuing with more of the famous Turning Point Duck Pond negotiation from last Monday.
The urgency of the people on whose behalf we're all here and working. and that is the people who have no alternative or extremely few alternatives. So we are continuing to pursue that, have and will.
And we interrupt this this duck pond tape, which is a tape of the negotiations between the SOS, the city council members, the community members, and the community house, to take an incoming call. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Bob, Robert.
This must be Crossroads Chris Brazda.
Pravda.
Pravda?
Yeah, truth.
Indeed. Go ahead, Pravda.
Why you say that you don't believe Darling can find another place, you don't believe another place exists? And I see a flyer today that you say support transitional housing and campground shelter. So your flyer says support both.
Yes.
You do support a transitional housing, and you don't believe that they're in any good faith effort to find an alternate open air shelter, and you don't believe there's any alternate air shelter.
Sorry, are you asking me, or?
No, I think it's the case. I don't believe there is anyway. That's why I would have made it a condition that if I no longer believe Citizens Committee for the Homeless should be in the halfway house business. This transitional housing project should be opposed absolutely on principle.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us more.
Well, the three directors of this project, Daryl Darling, who directs so-called community house, Paul Fotenhauer, the Lutheran minister who advanced the money to buy the land, and Paul Lee, already are in a private halfway house business.
Tower Lodge?
Correct. So who's going to get the van ride up? They're between somebody who gets a check and somebody who doesn't, as they begin to open the armory. Already a report from Mushroomic is that 25 people have been kicked out
of
the campground.
Oh, you mean talking about the open-air shelter right now?
Right, by Lou and the biker types that Karen hires to run that program. Sticks or Bill, you know what he is? I said to Darrell at the Duck Fund meeting, I said, oh, what did I say? Anyway, Sticks said, after I said whatever I said to Darrell, Sticks virtually almost attacked me. They had provoked an arrest, imminent arrest by Ron Hart. Apparently, they may have even confused me with you when I went out to hand out my piece, Community House Borders on Fraud.
They do look a little alike.
Right. And I went out there for a meeting, preparatory for a meeting, I handed out the literature, and he came up to me very provocatory. And he was also at the meeting. You know, and I said, Darrell, I'm going to hold you personally responsible for the actions of this person, Sticks. Because I said at the meeting, he's a virtual provocateur who tries to entrap and fight with people. He's always intervening on the behalf of the staff down there to throw people out. And what they're doing, of course, is splitting the homeless, and they're beginning to throw the people that they don't want in the trailers out, and they're being promised places in the trailers. You know, this is obvious that this is almost inevitable that this would happen.
Chris, do you know anybody who actually has been promised a place in the trailer? I'm very skeptical that these trailers are ever going to get set up and running, but
that's why they should be completely opposed. They're going to go out of pocket. $300,000 is the operating budget to run these trailers. Maybe it'll be covered by the rent, but you know they're going into the landlord business with the homeless. And they're supposed to be a homeless shelter. They're not supposed to be landlords on public money. They're already landlords privately, which should be enough of a conflict of interest to exclude them from consideration for CDBG money. In addition, you know, getting CDBG money to help the homeless, when you exclude four-fifths of them, then there's no guarantee that the one-fifth will be truly homeless.
You're talking about the replacement of the open-air shelters, 200 people with 48 people at the trailers, right?
Right. And Sticks at the meeting, he said, well, I'll hold you personally responsible if this trailer project doesn't go in. And I said I would be glad to accept responsibility for stopping this ill-conceived, cynical attempt to by the Citizens Committee to get out of the homeless.
Well, the reason that, I mean, again, I think you may well be better informed on this issue than I, Chris, because you've been tracking down lots of stats. I've seen you at different meetings, the CDBG grant hearing meeting on Tuesday, which happened the day after the Duck Pond meeting that we're talking about. You were also at the Duck Pond meeting. You've been at a number of these meetings.
Right. Celia Scott, who's done excellent work, maybe there is even some HUD money available to run OAS, Health and Human Services, initially said there wasn't. Anyway, she says she poses it as if the Citizens Committee is a private entity. And we saw on the board there the type of projects that this $800,000 in CDBG money finances. The city gives a lot of money to ISSP and Coral Street
the Interface Shelter, right. Shelter Program,
right.
Which oversees the open air shelter.
And the Coral Street Day Center. So who owns this land is really, you know, when the city is giving CCH regularly money over many years, who owns this land is really not, it's really a question, you know, who legally owns it, since the city's given them so much money.
Well, I'll tell you, Chris, my position, frankly, as I said before, is I am not entirely trustful. I'm more concerned right now with the immediate winter crisis, which is what I'm working on, which is the negotiations between Darling, the CCH, the City Council, and the campers to be able to keep their campground during the winter. I think that when this is established, it will give people a chance to discuss more fully the issues that you're concerned about. In other words, I don't think that any concessions have to be made, but I also think, and I'm trying to maintain an open mind that possibly CCH is at least moving to allow these campers to stay there over the winter. What's your take on that?
Well, if they are, they should be firm in their opposition to transitional house, because without an alternate site, there's simply no credibility to a man who can't even keep the crappers clean, you know, the three crappers after they lock up the indoor plumbing at 5 p.m. They don't have the money to run the indoor plumbing. There's simply no credibility to his so-called good faith efforts. And if there were, they'd make it a condition. But they've already stated early and often that they are simply not interested in running an open-air shelter.
They have given me that impression. I'm wondering if the high-profile education campaign and petitioning campaign that you as well as others have been a part of has maybe gotten them to change their position somewhat on this, if, for example, they can get support. And also, there's the prospect of Karen Gillette and her program, I guess the Homeless Community Resource Center, running the open-air shelter if it stays on the property it's on right now when it reopens at full capacity. What's your take on that?
I hope it does. I hope we can block these trailers. The three people you had supposedly representing the homeless, Sticks, and Thundering, Rowing Thunder, or Mike, are in virtual agreement that the transitional housing should go forward. And I'm in total opposition to CCH splitting their mandate and allowing them this money sink, which they will use to justify for decades the reason why they don't have any money to run open-air shelter or find an alternate site. You know, this is a real asset that's going to be tragic for us to lose.
Well, I think that there's to some extent, I mean, you and I have rooms to live in, whereas the three people you mentioned are, you know, living in tents out on the open-air shelter. So I think they may view the crisis out there as being paramount, at least for the winter. They want to be able to do a deal whereby, you know, for the first time, I might add, in an open fashion, the CCH or the property owners, whoever they are, and before that it was the city,
right,
will allow people to sleep on that property during the winter, and there will be an alternative to the very kind of rigorous, overly bureaucratized winter armory shelter. So I think that your arguments are not necessarily going to be lost on people, but I think they feel that the first fight is to keep the place open during the winter.
Well, if they're for transitional housing and this is the only identifiable site that it can go, and if they will not put it elsewhere, then for them to be for transitional housing is to be for their own eviction from the campground. So,
but I don't think they're going to. I think that they have taken the position pretty early on that if it is a choice between transitional housing on that site and the open air shelter on that site, they're going to choose the open air shelter. Even though they say, sure, we'd like to have more transitional housing somewhere, they're not going to say, you know, located on the site.
Right, and CCH should not be the entity that is in that business, because that's a different business. You know, rehabilitating drug addicts and dope addicts and mentally ill is a different project from housing people in emergency condition of not having a habitation, right?
They certainly are. Emergency shelter is different from transitional housing, no question.
It's sufficiently different that they shouldn't even, and then given the fact that they already own a halfway house, you know, that creates a conflict of interest for them in that they could funnel all the people that they interview and can't fit into their trailers, which are going to be sardine tins, they can funnel them into their tower lodge, which may that some of these people go then to their plantation, which is a block away from Darling's bed and breakfast, and they work the homeless garden. They get like $15 a day, 3 days a week, just enough rent to be able to pay him up at Tower Lodge.
Wow.
It's hard to get out of that cycle, and that's the kind of cycle that they have these people in.
Well, let me see what other people have to say, Chris.
All right.
You've given us, you know, kind of a survey, and do keep abreast of events and keep us abreast of any new discoveries you have.
Send me any and all paper.
Yes, sir.
I'd love to read it. Thank you.
All right, Chris.
And that was Crossroads' Chris Brazda, who's an independent civil rights activist concerned with the issues around the open-air shelter at Community House, who is been following that, does a lot of work on the internet, does a lot of postings of his research, and you can check that out on newsgroupalt.org.food-not-bombs. That's alt.org.food-not-bombs, in case you happen to have a computer handy in your tent. Anyway, a little bit more from the duck pond, and then we're going to quack out somewhere else and splash on to something a little better.
Controversy or crisis.
This is Scott Kennedy speaking.
Frankly, makes it less likely that we're going to be able to get other shelter because
Kennedy's a council member.
People are not going to make a commitment of their land, even if it's unused, open-ended to shelter. Most of the land that's available is available because it's in some kind of interim use. And what's happening right now with the Coral Street property is itself making it much more difficult to find land for shelter because this was explicitly understood that it was an interim use until the community house was ready to begin construction. The council never approved winter shelter at that site for reasons that will become apparent the first time it rains. And the fact that now the Citizens Committee, which is in the business of providing...
And, hey, that's the end of the tape, and hopefully we can turn that sucker over and hear a little bit more. It really was an important turnaround event, and therefore we're going to continue listening to it. Do call in, however. We'll interrupt the tape for callers. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
Shelter provided on whether Poconet or City Park Land, but I just don't see any private or non-profit property owner that's going to subject themselves to this kind of traumatic situation unless they just deed the property over at wholesale. But nobody's going to say, I'll do this on an interim basis, because the people who make the commitment at the outset aren't the same people who are there a year or two later when this kind of thing is thrown back in your face. So, I think that was a calculated gamble that Citizens Committee and council members took. And I'm glad we did it, because we were able to provide shelter for X numbers of people for X numbers of years. But it makes it kind of a hard sell.
We have a caller now, and you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. How you doing, caller?
Yeah, this is John Stewart, Robert. I appreciate the information that Chris Brosnan has. But
Chris was our last caller.
Right. But that information is available other places. His perspective on it, whatever it may be, and wherever he's coming from, he's coming from let me see how do I want to put this. Here's somebody who's been violent in our community of people working to end oppression. He's threatened me twice recently. He has threatened Kim Argua frequently and Robert Flory frequently. He's a very scary person. He's big, he's a bully, and essentially he's also a what I consider a bully coward who pushes people smaller than him around. He postures as some kind of martial arts with kung fu, but he won't go where there are martial arts people who I think understand that martial arts is essentially a self-defense based on a compassionate concern for the well-being of all of us. In any event, this person, we had a tremendous confrontation at the Radio Collective on Sunday about him and his treatment of us. So you have a right to do, have me on your show. I understand that. And thank you for letting me get on also and give my perspective. He knows how I feel about what he's doing, and I told him at that meeting at the Radio Collective that I was afraid of him, but he is such he is so embedded into his violence towards others that he as it were, stands in a relation of ignorance towards us who are able to stand in our fear in his face and face him down. In any event, that's my point of view about him.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Because I think for the larger audience, it sounds like a sort of a cat fight in a cat house.
Right.
But let me, this is a question that comes up in many organizations.
It really does.
Where there are disputes between people and...
Well, not this one. This is the first, absolutely the first one where I've been in organizations, several in the past, where there've been, people and problems and so forth, you know, but this is the first person I've met with, in my experience, in several different activist organizations who, as a consequence of people choosing to agree with other people and disagree with him about various political perspectives, chose to use violence against us. He has used violence against us.
Well, it's true, but on the other hand, complaints have been filed with the police on those particular issues, and presumably that process is going to take its course if that happens. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen around that. But I mean, what is yours? You're expressing a lot of intense feeling around this
right issue.
I'm trying to take. What are you looking for from?
Well, what I would really appreciate would be if he would stop attacking the people of our activist community, form his own organization, stop trying to interrupt the meetings of other organizations, that he doesn't like their political direction or their philosophy or their the way they run their meetings or anything. He's utterly free to build an organization of his own with its own political agenda, with its own philosophy, with its own direction. And if he did that, if he was absolutely the only person in the world with that political perspective, and if he got out there on the streets with a table, with his information, with his agenda, with his perspectives, and if he was the only, one and only voice with that perspective, and if he did that and he never got a member in his organization, but he nevertheless stood as a nonviolent person, that is to say, a person, he scoffs at us, at people who talk nonviolence, if he would stop attacking us, I wonder why it is that he doesn't go to a Ku Klux Klan meeting and tear off the Grand Dragon's sheet and threaten them the way he threatens the Food Not Bombs people. If he's so courageous, he's such a... Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm entering into my invective again, but he should go. He should leave us alone and start his own organization. Considering his actions towards us, he has absolutely no credibility with me. I don't give any credence at all to anything he has to say, even at the campgrounds. That's what I have to say about it.
It sounds, you know that I've had experience with Chris too, that's not been pleasant. I'm looking for guarantees an end to any violent either actions or threats or posturings, and I'm ever hopeful of finding that kind of solution.
Right, me too. I'm hopeful that I was standing in front of him at Logos with a friend, and he was on my case, and
but I think that we really should probably draw this one to a close.
Well, let me say what I had to say then, which has to do with what I say to him now. I hope someday his compassionate inner beingness springs forth and leads him to some kind of peaceful resolution with all of us.
Okay. So you've expressed your feelings.
Thanks for letting me on, Robert.
Sure, John, and you, have a good day.
You too. Bye.
And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, where anything goes. Free Radio at 96.3 FM. Call-in line is open, 427-3772. I'm encouraging us to try to stick to the issues here. One of the issues, of course, is violence and nonviolence, and that's a very important issue, but I'm trying actually to hit the broader issues of civil rights on the streets. So for all you folks who don't know what the hell we're talking about here, give me a call at 423-HUFF, and I'll talk to you about it after the show is over and give you my perspectives on it. Right now, do we have a guest here potentially in the studio? Phil Free, perhaps?
Only because the phone is busy.
Okay, well, Mr. Free, tell me.
Hey, that's tape. Where'd you get that?
I actually stole that.
Did you pay for that?
Hey, that's one of your tapes, Phil.
Did you pay for that?
Hey, I would.
Okay.
Yeah, all right.
Anyway.
So what's happening with you in the infamous, long-delayed, play-a-guitar-go-to-jail complaint?
To the best of my knowledge, that's been dropped.
Dropped.
We'll see. I mean, you know, it could happen again, but the charges that were pending were dropped. There's other stuff happening, other street musicians getting harassed on the mall, and I am on the story.
Give me an update on that.
Tarzan, who plays the drum.
Oh, yes.
Big guy. He's been
earlier.
Yeah, just broadcast. Last week, he got cited for disturbing the peace. I got an interview with him on that. And then just yesterday, he was cited for disturbing a piece right next door to Logos. Apparently, Logos filed a complaint for him playing his drum about 25 feet from the store. And I don't know, some people were pretty pissed off that Logos did that and went into Logos and complained. But really, the reason I came in, I wanted to ask you a question, Robert, since I couldn't get on the phone. And wait for your attention not to be diverted. He's sneakily answering the phone behind my back right now.
Indeed, and let's have the caller join us. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I believe
Hi, caller.
You have some opinions about musicians on the mall. Should they be burned or simply buried with their drums?
Well, I personally think that, you know, in one way they're kind of cool, you know, and in another way they're kind of a detriment, you know, depending on, you know, what their message is and what they're saying and how they're saying it and, you know.
Okay, what would be a detrimental message, sir?
Well, I remember there's one guy who was singing about how shitty it is to be on the mall and how horrible his life is and da-da-da-da-da.
There are a few people that sing that song.
Yeah, well, then they should probably go sing it under the bridge where no one has to listen to it, because I personally think that, you know, I don't feel that that's anything. That, you know, the mall for me is a place to go buy and sell, not a place to go lie and smell, okay?
Yeah, well, it sounds like a pretty much a capitalist outlook.
Well, it's... You know, I think you should have compassion for all people.
Maybe people should have compassion for that man's rotten life. Maybe
yeah,
he needs
to
express
true,
that.
That's true. That's true. But I also have compassion.
But you don't want to hear it. That's true. If he has a hard life, you don't want to hear that.
If you let me finish.
Go ahead, caller.
I feel like, you know, you should have compassion for the people that don't have as much as you. But you should maybe also have compassion for the business owners that struggle to pay their rent every month and try to have a business. Have a little compassion for my grandma who's afraid to go down the mall because she's scared of these people. You know, right now it's the beginning of the Christmas season. You know, it's like...
Wait a minute,
Who are
these people? Who are these people?
Who are these people?
That your grandma's afraid of, and why is she afraid of them? Is that because people have taught her to be afraid of them, or is somebody
did somebody do something bad
to your grandma?
Like, dudes are aggressively throwing your point down, or aggressively panhandling, or aggressively doing anything. Old folks, and even some younger folks, are taken aback by that.
Well, I live on those streets, and I've never seen the aggressive panhandling that you talk about.
And that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, because I go down there as a young man, and I got guys in my face going, give me a quarter, give me a dime, give me this, give me that. Hey, buddy, you got a dollar?
You know, well, maybe because you look like you got money.
What?
Maybe you look like you got money. I never get that.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't have any apologies for being successful.
I didn't ask you to apologize.
I
work
hard for my money, sir, okay? I work very hard, and I don't feel like I should be panhandled just because I have a nice pair of shoes on.
Well, you know, I think some of the street musicians on the mall work very hard, too, and whether you recognize it as a valid type of work, they do.
Oh, I'm not saying I have any beef against somebody that's going to sit there with a hat and a guitar and sing their song. But
you
if they're going to sit right in front of a store door and scare away customers, then they're not doing anybody any good.
I don't know anybody that sits next to a store door because it's been illegal for quite some time. Where does this happen? What store are you referring to?
Oh,
I've never seen that.
Logos, there's this one guitar player that hangs out right in front of the window there.
Logos?
Logos, the jewelry store.
What's he look like?
I don't really
What's the guy playing in front of Logos? Because I know Logos has been cracking down on that for a long time. You can't play by the door at Logos. The only person that's allowed to play near Logos is the place the business sanctions. The guy that sits next to the coffee cart is the only one allowed to play anywhere near Logos. You have to be at least 10 feet from Logos unless the business has asked you to be down there.
And this rule is followed all the time.
Some people push it.
Okay, I'm gonna intervene here because I got some things I want to ask you, caller, and I got a question or two. How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
All my life, actually 28 years.
Okay, now are you a man who's ever been, shall we say, on the streets yourself?
Not in this town, but in Hawaii I was homeless, actually.
I got you.
Hawaii.
And have you spent most of your time here in Santa Cruz up to this point, or?
Yeah, actually I've been here since the 70s. I've been in Santa Cruz County. We moved to Scotts Valley when I was like in second grade, like 5-4 years old. And I'm 28 now, and I've been in this county and in this town. I've been in Santa Cruz, living in Santa Cruz, since 1977.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do for a
living? I'm a tile setter.
And are you, what is your sense, generally, about how the mall has changed, if at all, in the last 10 years?
Well, I mean, when the earthquake hit, you know, it like really cleared it out, you know, and, you know, now I feel like I think it was way more peaceful way back when like they had the Cooper House, and there's a happier vibe back then than there is now. I know it's become a lot more commercial, but it seems like the homeless are a lot more aggressive too. I mean, back when I was growing up, I didn't see the panhandling as hard as I do now. It's a lot more, you know, I realize these people are desperate, but it's scary because that's the one part of town that I feel like, you know, everybody, all the older folks, they'll go to Capitola Mall where there's not that problem. They'll go over the hill where there's not that problem. People are losing money because these folks are aggressively panhandling. So you can't deny it.
Do you have any, well, actually, it is a question that often...
I can deny it.
Yeah, Phil will deny it here, but it's a question that often comes up because I've actually been studying, you know, like the sales figures, and I've talked to Downtown Association people, and, you know, certainly it's a complaint of merchants and others of panhandling, although, frankly, the complaint, you know, the fellow who runs the little kind of hot dog coffee stand next to Logos,
yeah.
John, John actually feels that, although he doesn't have too much positive to say about the Food Not Bombs or the Feed the People meal that's right down the street, the free meal, his view is that the panhandling actually is not really, hasn't really been happening since it was made criminal under the city's, you know, ask for a dime after dark, peacefully go to jail law, which came into effect, like, you know, April.
You know, I don't know all about national laws. To me, I can go down the street at any time and, you know, put a wire on me and you can find out for yourself. I always get hit up for money.
I get hit up too. I mean, it is legal to panhandle at certain times at certain places, and some people panhandle anyway.
Did you say no?
But, you know, that...
After dark? I'm more panhandled after dark than during the day.
Have you ever just tried saying no?
Yeah,
why is it such a problem just to ask for money?
It's kind of uncomfortable to have to say no 15 times walking from my car to the Catalyst.
That poverty makes you feel uncomfortable, sir.
It's not poverty making me feel uncomfortable. I could be poor, too, but you know what? I have the gumption to go out and work. It really pisses me off.
The gumption to go out and work?
If it's an older man that looks like he went to Vietnam or he's crippled, then I have compassion in it. You know what? I'll even throw him a buck. But if it's somebody that's sitting there following the dead, fucked up on drugs, my age, that could be working, and don't tell me that these people can't be working.
Oh, no, nobody's following the dead anymore, but maybe it's just because they don't follow your lifestyle.
If they don't follow my lifestyle, that's fine, but they shouldn't ask anything from me either, all right?
Well, you should just feel, hey, wait a minute,
one
comment. You don't feel that they should have the right to ask you. You also feel that people shouldn't have the right to sit around and sing about their fucked up lives. How do you feel about the Constitution, sir?
Generally, I think it's an okay piece of paper.
Yeah. How about freedom of speech?
I don't agree with all of it. I think some of it's actually pretty outdated, to be honest.
You probably don't agree with free speech, then.
No, I totally agree with free speech.
You don't sound like you feel about free speech. Somebody who has a fucked up life shouldn't be allowed to sing about it. He should have to sing about it under a bridge. You know what you said?
I think that he should be able to sing about it anywhere where people that want to listen to him can listen to him.
Well, I think I know who you're talking about.
I'm at a station where if I don't want to hear it, I can change the channel.
Well,
I don't want to walk into Logos and I don't want to hear this guy singing at me because, you know, they'll be pointing themselves right at you.
Okay, well, I know the people that play in front of Logos, and I think I know the person that sings about his fucked up life, and I think that's Skidmark Bob. And I happen to listening to that guy.
You should be able to go someplace and listen to him where the
then you can,
people
or you can walk. You can walk away.
If
you don't want to be in the city.
This guy's looking at me like I should give him money because he's had a fucked up life and because he's such a wonderful musician.
Did he say that? You got that from the look. You got that from the look in a man's eyes that you should give him something because he's a fucked up musician.
Well, listen, gentlemen, I think we have a difference of opinion here, which is pretty intense.
I just like to address issues intensely. You talk very calmly about it, and I like to just get in your face if I have.
It's taken me a long time to form, and I've been in this town quite a long time, you know, and I feel like, hey, if you're poor, I feel bad. I have compassion for you.
Yeah, you sound like you feel really bad, sir.
Well, should I?
You're a very compassionate guy, sir. These people shouldn't be allowed to ask me for money. These people, those people, me people, my people are better than those people.
All right, so they have food to eat and stuff like that. I have compassion for somebody that decided to give up on themselves to the point where they can't fucking pull themselves out of it. I mean, I've been homeless myself, okay? I've lived in a car. I've done the whole nine yards, okay? So you can't tell me
that. You chose to join the system to get out of it.
But I didn't go asking people for money, okay? I went and I found work and I got myself out of the hole that I dug.
Where do you get that money?
Anybody can do that.
Where do you get that money? You only give you that money when they give you that money, right?
No, you can't take the money. To work for.
What if your boss didn't give you the money? Could you just take it out of the cash register?
What's that?
You're still just being given money.
No,
you're just working for it. You're just working for it.
Let me explain to you it's called the work ethic, okay? You do something for somebody, somebody appreciates it, and they give you cash. That's the problem.
It's called wage slavery, sir.
They never learned that theory.
It's called wage slavery, sir. Thank you.
Let me
I'll be on the mall later. You can walk by if you don't like my music.
That's okay. If I do like it, I'll bet put a quarter in your hat. But I doubt it.
Before you go, let me ask you something. Are you a lot of what you say? I think gets Phil's dander up. And I can't speak for him, of course, but this may be the reason because you have you actually investigated the people you're talking about? In other words, you're saying, well, these people are just running around on drugs, swallowing the dead.
Sure, I have. You know what? I've been in this town a long time. I know a lot of people in the town, and I know hangs out on the street. I know what's going on that corner by Logos. There's massive drug sales going on there. There's massive marijuana being sold. If I want to get drugs, all I have to do is go to that corner and I can get drugs within 5 minutes.
Are you suggesting that the people who sell drugs are panhandling? That sounds to me like
it's all part of the same. I mean, panhandling, they're selling drugs. They're making a buck any way they can on things that they shouldn't be making a buck on.
So you, for example, don't favor people selling alcohol out of stores but as well?
They're paying rent, they're paying taxes, they're putting back into the system, okay? These people that are selling pot on the corner, they're basically sticking the money in their pockets, and hey, that's fine if that's what they want to do, okay? But that's what I'm saying, is it scares folks away, all right? Drug sales and panhandling scare folks away.
Yeah, but you see, the same argument used to be used about blacks downtown. Blacks downtown scared...
What is the problem with blacks?
No. But you see, blacks scared people away. That was the reason they wanted to keep them segregated in other areas.
That's fine, but blacks being black is not a crime, okay?
Selling alcohol is not a crime, and alcohol is much more dangerous drug than marijuana.
I agree, and I think marijuana marijuana should be legalized, right, personally, right. So you don't have all this.
So the fact that marijuana is a crime really isn't relevant, is it?
No, but it does scare people. If you're, you know, 55 years old and you were raised in a way that, you know, this is this way and this is that way.
Do we then fashion our streets for the tastes of people who are 55 years old?
Well, you figure that the older generation, the people over 50, are the ones that hold the most money in this country.
Well,
okay.
Are they the ones who then decide what goes on our streets?
No, I wouldn't say that, but I think that the people that have, I mean, you asked me if I was homeless ever, and I said, yeah. Have you ever been a business owner on the mall?
Have I been a business owner? No, I haven't.
Well, then, I mean, that's the point here. It's like, I'm saying you should have compassion for these poor folks.
I am.
You should have compassion for these poor folks, and maybe we should have compassion for the folks that are trying to make an honest buck, too.
Well,
on the same vein.
I agree with you. I think we should have compassion for all of us, and I think that there has to be a way of all of us working together on this. And that's why I'm, for example, encouraging the downtown mediation project, which people who have problems of one thing or another come out and talk about them. You know?
The problem I have is, why do they have to hang out there? Why is it there? Why is it where most of the commerce in the town takes place, to where the homeless and the people that are selling, you know, their pot and their little beads and whatever else? Why do they have to hang out there? Is that the only spot they can hang out? There's plenty of places in the town to hang out. There's plenty.
You're pretty
of
intense about this. You know, why do you have such an objection to people hanging out there?
I just feel sorry for the folks that are trying to make it on the bus.
I don't think Logos is going under. I don't think Cap Canary is going under. I don't think the food court.
Yeah, but you know what, Capitola. When I first came here, it was just a little one-horse town. I mean, it wasn't that big. Santa Cruz was the major.
Well, you know, Capitola has a different ambiance. Capitola has a closed and.
You know, every town. Of all the towns in this county, yeah. Which one has the most homeless and the most?
The question though is, do you want? And does the Santa Cruz community want Santa Cruz looking like Capitola?
Probably no. But yeah. You know what? It'd be nice to have a happy medium. You go over the hill to Los Gatos. You go over to Los Altos. You go over to Watsonville. You don't have the homeless problem you have in Santa Cruz. And my question is, why are the homeless so happy to be here? Why? What draws them to Santa Cruz?
Santa Cruz is the largest community in the county. You know that. Santa Cruz is the largest town. Watsonville is smaller. Capitola is much smaller.
But per capita, I would bet we have more homeless. I mean, it's not even like a percentage where, you know...
We also have the university. Keep that in mind.
Well, what? So what? If somebody gets a degree and they decide
to... No, the point is the university is a more liberal group of people, and that's 4,000 or 5,000 people.
Right. But yeah. They, you know, they're students. Most of the university students that I've met and that I know are very serious about their studies.
Yeah, right, but they're also more tolerant, many of them, than, let's say, people in San Jose.
Well, that's possibly true, but the thing that bothers me is that, you know, I feel like this town deserves as much of a chance as any other town, you know?
I talk
to tourists and stuff like that, and they go, there's just so many scumbags in this town, and it scares away. And so that's the tourist mentality. That's a lot of money that comes into the town. You know, if everybody decided to just, you know, do what they're all doing down on the mall, just hanging out and, you know, making little necklaces and playing music.
Well, they do that in Berkeley, and it seems to work pretty well. I mean, Berkeley, you know, has people making necklaces on the street up and down every day.
Oh, yeah,
day.
I know, Telegraph Avenue.
Right, and that doesn't drive people away. It actually encourages business.
That's very true. But you know what? I've never been hardly as aggressively panhandled in Berkeley as I have in Santa Cruz. And I must say that I don't live in Berkeley, so I don't see it as much. But when I went to Berkeley, you know, I went up and down Telegraph Avenue. I got panhandled once, and it was, you know, it was more like a question than a demand.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because I find I get hassled worse in Berkeley. But I mean, who knows? You know, maybe
you
different.
Might spend a lot more time in Berkeley. If you don't. Yeah. I don't really care because I don't live in Berkeley, okay? If they don't like it there, then that's their problem. But I live here, and I feel like, hey, you know, I work very hard for my dollar, and I feel like if these folks don't want to work hard, that's fine. That's their prerogative. It is a free country. Well, but don't bug me for my money.
Here's a hard word I was going to debate with you just one more time.
No, I'm going to debate one more thing. Comment. Instead of comment on what you said. But in Berkeley, I have it on good authority from the shop owner themselves that the shop owners in Berkeley pour pine saw along the street before their version of farmer's market where all the people hang out. They pour it where all the people sit to keep the punks from hanging out. So, you know, punks one time, deadheads another. You know, the fascists have a way of dealing with us.
I just pour pine saw down just to clean up the urine that some homeless folk has left in their storefront.
Well, no. The intent was explicitly the smell was so strong that it would drive people away. This shop owner's intent, and they were taught it by another shop owner. It's common practice in Santa Cruz. Last year, during the sit-down protests, somebody came and poured fish oil on the sidewalk on Cathcart and Pacific, right where all the hippies sit. I wonder where they exchange these little fascist ideas.
I don't know, but you know what? I was down on the mall not too long ago, and some of the homeless folks that hang out right on that corner got a whole big load of bread, and rather than eat it, they would throw it into the street so the pigeons would eat it, and the pigeons would get hit by cars. There's about 4 dead pigeons right there in front of that little corner. Because that's, you know, entertainment for those homeless folks. It's like
the
bread.
Excuse me, were you there that day, sir?
Yes, I was there that day. I saw it with my own eyes.
Yeah, you saw the birds there. Were you there when the bread got thrown in the street?
I was watching them throw the bread into the street, okay? If you want to see
it. But it was stale bread that the cops said couldn't sit on the sidewalk.
Oh.
So whose bread is this? Why, this is the people's bread. Officer.
No,
I can't sit here. You've got to get rid of it.
Okay, that's fine. So we'll smash some dead birds for entertainment.
Oh, that's they were trying to smash. Oh, yeah, the little hippies were trying to get the birds smashed.
That's
come on.
What happened. That was exactly what happened.
Oh,
no,
shit.
What happened. Exactly what happened. And even all my friends are all, that's what they're doing. And everybody was obvious. It was
well, I think people who are killing birds, you know, one can't justify that under any circumstances.
I agree.
But you see, I think that you are, in the passion of your argument, you know, mixing a bunch of different groups. For example, using the word homeless, and interestingly enough, you've been listening to my show earlier on?
Yeah.
You know, one of my major concerns is the open-air shelter staying open. And actually, recently, the people out of the open-air shelter
issued a flyer, which they, the headline is, "The merchants really want 200-plus homeless left in the streets." And that is one of the concerns of, I guess, all of us in the community, that if they close down the open-air field out there, people who are out there most of the time will have, you know, gravitate
downtown.
Here's
the thing, though. It's like, there's a lot of folks that feel that if there's shelters built in Santa Cruz under any, you know, any circumstance, it's going to attract more homeless. And the homeless aren't going to hang in those shelters 24-7. They're going to hang out on the streets and panhandle the rest of the time. So what you got here is like the homeless Disneyland, where they can come and hang out and, you know, make money on the streets during the day and, you know, have some place to sleep at night.
Well, see, again, I think you're mixing different groups. I mean, there are plenty of homeless people who work out of that campground. They go out and they have jobs.
Oh, yeah.
I just get kicked out.
Those people, I have the utmost respect.
No. Yeah, well, see, I'm not really trying to make that a contest. I'm just saying that there are different groups of people who do different things. And a lot of the people who were... Hello?
I'm here. There's somebody on the other line, but I'll just let them go.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm about to kind of conclude the show anyway, because unfortunately they've cut me back an hour. I wish I had more time
okay.
to talk to you. But there are different groups. There are people who panhandle. There are people who would never panhandle. They're very proud. There are people who get checks, but, you know, who also seek jobs. There's people who get checks and don't. There are people passing through. His car broke down. They have to know it. You know, there are different groups of people. And I think it's really important for you to distinguish between these groups. You know, if you're talking about people who are being cruel to birds, and then you start saying the homeless are cruel to birds.
I'm not saying the homeless cars is a cruel total, birds. Like, you know, a blanket statement.
Right.
I'm talking about the folks who are hanging out on that corner, South Park Pacific, that day, okay? That's, I mean,
some,
the corner
of
Pacific,
folks.
I mean, some they're laughing when these birds are getting run
Wait,
over.
How many of those homeless people had cars? What killed the birds?
Okay, that's fine, but they knew that the cars were going that way.
Right.
All right, I mean, that's a moot point.
Well, I think, again, it sounds like we have a real gap in our perspective, because I think that if you eliminate the open-air shelter, it's not that you drive people away. People are being driven away from all different towns. And I think that it's this illusion that Santa Cruz is some kind of great mecca. I don't think it's true.
I've heard that from very many locals. Very many that, you know. I've even heard that Santa Barbara was having a homeless problem, so they stuck them all on a bus for Santa Cruz. I don't know if that's true. I heard that from somebody. I don't know. But, you know, it's like...
I think it's more like one of those urban myths. But, you know, if you get really solid information on this, please let me know.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I just said that because I'd heard it before from someone. I don't know. It could be a complete lie. But,
it's this kind of myth, though, that I think is really important. Like, the homeless people at the campground are really trying to get merchant support so the open-air shelter can remain open during the winter for the 60 people who want to deal with the rain and the mud. And those are not your summertime surfers, you know, they're...
Right.
Folks
I just don't understand why these folks that are just so hard up at getting the shelter, why they don't take a little more interest in their lives and, you know, go ahead and try to find a job and then pay rent and, you know...
Well, some of them are, and I know that, you know, it's... And you know...
It's not that hard.
You know, right, but you know what the rents are like around here.
I take $600 a month just to live by myself, and believe me, there's some times where I'm having to eat top ramen and scrape, very hard, okay?
Right.
And
but you have a family here, right? You have connections here. You have numerous things here, which a lot of people don't have the advantage of.
That's true, but that doesn't mean I want to go to my mom and go, "Hey, mom, please give me this." I'm an adult now. That's not what I mean.
I'm not saying you did that, but there is, you have an advantage in having those kinds of, you know, contact. And indeed, actually, ironically, perhaps in opposition to what I've said, some of the homeless people that are out there that lived here in Santa Cruz all their lives.
Sure.
And, you know, they've fallen through for different reasons. But
look, I know that Reagan, you know, he cut like the mental health back in the 80s and stuff like that. And a lot of these people are certifiable and actually do need like maybe mental health help and stuff like that. And I feel sorry for these folks. Okay, but on the other hand, what can I do? There's not really, I mean, I'm not somebody that's going to be able to have enough money to open up a big home for everybody so they can get mental, I mean, things cost money. That's the whole bottom line. I hate to say it, but the bottom line is everything costs money.
Well, the open-air shelter
costs money.
The open-air shelter will cost a total of about $1,500 for 3 months for 75 people. That's really cheap compared to what it would cost to do anything else, even something like a jail. Of course, it's really expensive. So I think that particular project is very cost-effective.
So are you getting a lot of support from the merchants?
I don't know. This flyer just went out a couple days ago. I know that, you know, there's a different body of opinion between different merchants. And frankly, I haven't talked to a lot of merchants in the last couple days, Thanksgiving and all that. But I'll be kind of, I actually will be interviewing some merchants, and hopefully we'll be playing their opinions on the air.
Hmm.
Well, what's your first name?
Rick.
Well, look, Rick, thanks for calling in. Is there anything you want to conclude with?
I just don't want to come off like I hate people that are poor or anything like that. That's not, that, you know, that other guy might think that, but that's not true, okay? I've been there. And all I'm saying is, you can get yourself out of the trouble you're in by a little bit of hard work and a little bit of trying, okay? I'm not saying that everybody can do it. I'm not saying that everybody can do it. But I'm saying that it offends me to see somebody my age that has got an able body that can work, that's looking me in the eye like he's got nowhere to go and no place to be, and there's no way he's going to get himself out of what he's gotten himself into. Because I don't buy it. I don't buy it for a second. You know, it's like I've been homeless, and I've got a place now, and it's not through luck. It's through trying. You know, if these people want to give up on themselves, that's fine, but don't bug me about it, because I don't have any compassion for somebody that's not going to try.
Well, I appreciate your, you know, calling here to voice your opinion. And again, if you get more new information, more specific information, please give us a call again.
Okay.
And it's Chris, is it?
Rick.
I'm sorry. That was Chris before. Thanks, Rick.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, we get into these long discussions, and I find my time is just almost completely gone. I can always cross my fingers and hope that the next person doesn't come in for another hour so I can do some more tape playing here. I'm afraid, however, we're probably going to get bumped real quick. Before we get bumped, I'm going to read a few things from the open-air shelter. They have a new newsletter out there called The Back 40 Bugle. Yes, The Back 40 Bugle. November 21st, 1995, Daryl Darling agrees to help. This is the
Back 40 Bugle's lead story. On November 20th, at a meeting between the Save Our Shelters Committee and Daryl Darling, project director of the proposed community house, Daryl indicated a willingness to relax somewhat the December 3rd deadline in order to accommodate campers who can't go to the armory or churches. Mayor Catherine Byers and Councilmember Scott Kennedy were present at the meeting, all seemed eager to solve the problem of where the homeless would go if the Back 40 is closed. Kennedy said the main concern of the council is whether residents can really withstand the weather. A major concern of the Citizens Committee is about how to meet the needs of the current campers and still go ahead on schedule with the grading of the land and the placing of the trailers. The Save Our Shelters Committee is still working with the council and the Citizens Committee looking for an alternate site for an open-air shelter. Any ideas, anyone? That's the lead story. Second story, City Council to vote on declaring a state of emergency in Santa Cruz with regards to homeless shelters. On Tuesday, November 28th at 3:30 p.m., the Santa Cruz City Council will vote on whether or not to declare the city in a state of emergency with regards to homeless shelter. If the measure is passed, the city will be able to relax the rules governing how many people can sleep in a given area. Residents of the Back 40 are urged to attend and speak to the council. That's November 28th. Third story, Back 40 residents begin to organize for winter. With the good news, the residents may stay beyond December 3rd. There is a move to winterize the tent, so those who want to stick it out. Michael Sheridan, resident, and Barbara Riverwoman, community supporter, are beginning to solicit pallets, tarps, and other necessities from local businesses. If you plan to stay, leave materials to winterize your site. Talk to Michael in the back corner on the Coral Street side. Equipment will be stored with Mike Bustos or Squirrel. Self-governing group forming. In order to take more responsibility for what happens in the Back 40, in order to have more control of our own lives, in order to help the campground keep it going during the winter with reduced staff, residents are forming a self-governing body representing the residents and their concerns. If you're interested in serving on this body or helping form its rules, contact STIX. I'll come to the next meeting of the Save Our Shelters Committee on Wednesday, November 29th at 1 p.m. Concern about the residents who can't face winter. There are some residents of the Back 40 who will not be able to use the services of the armory and the churches but are not able to survive the harsh winter weather. We need to let Karen Gillette of the Resource Center know about these people so they can get adequate shelter. And there is more and more. Hopefully this flyer, this, I should call it the Back 40 Bugle, will be available at the table downtown. And I believe Rolling Thunder Mike is going to be down there at the table, along with other folks from SOS, Save Our Shelter, to solicit opinions, solicit donations, pass out information, and look for the kinds of winterizing materials that they need, which, again, I remind you, are things like pallets, tarps, tents, Coleman stoves, Coleman lamps, flashlights, batteries, rope candles, propane tanks, gloves, winter coats, sweaters, flannel shirts, long johns, scarves, hats, socks, outdoor shoes, raincoats, rain boots, rain jackets, rubber boots, umbrellas, blankets, and sleeping bags, and anything else you can think of that's pertinent for living outdoors in the winter. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Norse. This show is a 10 to 12 civil rights show, happens twice a week between Monday and on Friday. This is the time we normally end, but I'm going to try to keep squeezing in a little more because I didn't have a 3-hour show, and I long for the good old days. Here's a special note from those who are concerned about the anti-homeless column issued by Lee Cornstrom. Lee Cornstrom, as you know, is a columnist, I mean, you don't know, for the San Jose Mercury News. And he has a Monday column, and this one was attacking the bums downtown. Maybe our last caller and Lee would have been in agreement. Not sure. But I certainly didn't agree with Lee's column, and for that matter, I didn't agree with the last caller, Rick. But if you're interested in expressing your view to Lee, his office at the San Jose Mercury News is at Lincoln and Pacific, right above Cottontails. You go up the front door, second floor, you turn left. And there's also an elevator around back if you're disabled in any way. And you can talk to Lee and ask that maybe give you a little space in response if you don't think that they should hose down the streets and treat human beings like debris downtown. Lee, for those who would like to talk to him on the screen, he's a tall guy with orange hair. He has kind of a florid face, a big pot belly, somewhat bigger than mine, even.